Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. I want to remind you all that you can weigh in and let your voice be heard each and every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WKAR AM 870 by following me on Twitter at AlMartinWKAR, like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up, and we want to hear always what's on your mind. And, of course, you know you can give us a ring right here at Current Sports by calling 517-355-9527. And how have you been enjoying the show so far? I encourage all of the dedicated Current Sports listeners out there to let us know what you like, what you don't like, and post some conversations that you would like to hear discussed right here on the show. Again, tweet me, Facebook me, or email me, or give us a ring right here at the station. We want to hear what's on your noggin. Boy, have we had a strong week so far here on the show. Monday, we talk with MSU professor in the field of sports psychology, Daniel Gould, as he gave us some pretty good insight into the world of sports psychology. We also kicked off our very first edition of Motivational Mondays with motivational speaker DeAndre Carter. That got many of you pumped. We'll remind you that you can submit a sporting idea that you would like to see DC tackle next week. He will try to motivate an athlete, fan base, or general topic of your liking. Again, Facebook us, tweet us, or email me your idea. We would love to hear your thoughts on that new segment. And yesterday we had a full-blown MSU football media day coverage for you all. The college football season is, get this, just 23 nights away. It is really rolling. Can't wait for it. Can you believe that? I can smell the pig skin now. Well, today we invite a man who is a native of Saginaw, Michigan. He previously served as the assistant athletic director at Olivet College for 1 year before a four-year stint as the athletic director at Delta College. Now he was hired as the athletic director at Lansing Community College last year. It's my pleasure to welcome Greg Malik to Current Sports.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me here.
No problem, Greg. So, Greg, first of all, what made you want to get involved into the world of athletic directing?
To be dead honest with you, growing up an athlete, playing all the sports as a kid, excelling a little bit in the sport of basketball in high school and being able to play it at the college level, and then going into the field of education, it was kind of a natural progression. Coached at Arthur Hill High School on their staff for about 6-7 years, was fortunate enough to be on the staff when we won a state championship in 2006. Sorry, Okemos, beat you in double overtime, but that's okay. It's in the past.
In double O to overtime.
It was the only Class A double overtime state championship game in history. Jonathan Jones, who went on to play at Oakland, phenomenal that game for Okemos. I think he put 38 on us.
Oh, my goodness.
Just a phenomenal game if you ever get a chance to look at the tape. Mm-hmm. But from there, I was teaching in K-12 Saginaw Public. Wanted to get into some administration stuff, and athletics just seemed like the natural route. The summer after I finished my master's degree, I saw that the Delta position was posted. Just finishing my master's degree, didn't think I would have a snowball's chance of getting the job, but they invited me on campus for an interview, and the rest is history, as they say.
Wow. So I've got to go back to that game. The only double overtime game in Class A history. How did you play that game, Greg?
I was coaching.
Oh, you were coaching.
I was coaching, yeah.
Gotcha,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I wasn't
just
playing.
Sure.
Yep, 2006,
okay.
I was coaching. But to go back to the game, it's one of those things that for the kids, you know, you just look back and it's an experience we'll get together probably every 5 to 10 years and talk about and have a reunion about. But it was, you know, Okemos had some phenomenal players, more specifically, like I said, Jonathan Jones, who went on to have a great career at Oakland University for Greg Campy. We had a kid at the time who was a junior by the name of Dar Tucker, who was top 50 in the country, went on to play at DePaul. He was a Michigan State recruit him pretty heavily back then. But it was just great to see kids battle, you know, put their heart and soul on the line for a game that goes into double overtime for all the marbles, literally. It was a great, great experience.
I'm sure that was a fun time. Now, Greg, how is the position, when you look at the position of athletic director, how has that position evolved and changed over the years?
At our level, at the community college level, it takes on – more roles. You and I had a quick conversation before we got on the radio here, and I'm sure we'll get into about the local high school athletic director being rolled into being an assistant principal role as well. A lot of the athletic directors at this level, at the community college level, same type of scenario. Mm-hmm. Not only am I the athletic director, I'm also the deputy Title IX compliance coordinator dealing with sexual misconduct on campuses. A lot of the other athletic directors at this level will get rolled into admissions enrollment director positions, academic advising, things along that nature. What it does in a positive way is it keeps us in touch with our student athletes on more than one point. You know, you have the one point of being an athletic director, a lot of them from an admissions or from an academic advising standpoint. It gives us more opportunities to touch our student athletes, you know, to help them out with what we can, you know, socially, academically, things along that nature. As far as, at least my opinion, at the NCAA level, the four-year level, it's become more corporate. You know, your athletic directors are becoming more and more out there as the face of their athletic programs. You know, they're out there to shake hands, to bring in those boosters, to make that money for the schools and the universities. And they're also there to represent not only themselves and the university, but the student athletes. You know, we're all advocates for student athletes as athletic directors, and advocates for our coaches. My coaches don't work for me. I work for them. You know, I work for my student athletes. Right. I need to try and find out what's the best avenue for my student athletes to be successful, athletically and academically. And it's more grassroots at this level than anything.
Definitely. I totally agree with you on that. Now, like you said, we're bringing up that whole Lansing School District right now. For those of our listeners who don't know, the Lansing School District, they announced this summer that they are eliminating its high school athletic director position. And, well, not eliminated, just shifting it, I should say. Shifting the duties of the athletic director to the assistant principal. Now, Greg, what are your thoughts on that? And is it realistic for an assistant principal to be able to handle both of those duties and do both effectively?
If you have the right person in the place, yes. Obviously, having some administrative experience as an assistant principal, they're going to understand and be able to deal with the administrative responsibilities of being an athletic director. Maybe they'll just take some time to learn some of the game day operations things, travel setups involved as an athletic director, specifically at the high school level. It's the teachable things that they're getting that they can easily adapt to. If you have somebody in place that has those unteachable skills of how to communicate well, you know, how to interact well with the public, how to interact well with parents, how to interact well with student athletes, those skills that people just naturally develop on their own due to either their personality or their upbringing.
Right.
If you get that right person in place, all the other things are teachable skills that they can bring on and they can learn and use.
Have you seen situations where they've got the wrong person for the job?
No, not specifically. You know, my first experience with that is a guy named Mike Thayer, who's the athletic director and assistant principal up at Bay City Western. Mm-hmm. I was actually the head basketball coach there for about 6 months over the summer before I took the AD job at Delta. And he was a former high school assistant and a principal at a smaller district, came on board, and they did the hybrid when the athletic director at the time resigned. They did the hybrid with the assistant principal. From my understanding, most of his duties deal more with discipline of students and student athletes as an assistant principal, and he's done a phenomenal job. I haven't been fortunate enough to meet a lot of the administrators in the high school level here in the Lansing area,
right.
So I really don't know if there's somebody out there. I'm sure they're all doing a great job.
Well, time will tell. I tell you that,
yep.
Greg. So, all right, Greg. Now, in mainstream media, and we were talking about this again before we hit the air, small colleges that are D2, D3, they don't get much coverage or recognition specifically in the sporting world. Now, you've been involved with colleges like this in the field of athletics. Describe the biggest difference between athletic directing and athletics at the D2 and D3 level compared to D1.
Obviously, most of it, in my opinion, is profile. At your high major Division I programs like a Michigan State and other Big Ten schools, these kids are exposed to so much media. I mean, the Johnny Manziel thing you led into the show with, you know, situations like that, they have to be really, really careful of. At our level, being more grassroots, and sometimes even at the Division II level, being somewhere in between, there's not as much exposure to the media. You know, at our level, we wish we had more exposure to the media.
Right.
Being an athletic director at this level, I have more of a hands-on responsibility with my student-athletes. Having about 150 to 160 student-athletes, by probably November, December, I'll know every one of their first and last names. At the Division I level, you can't expect an athletic director, maybe not even an associate or assistant athletic director, to know the name of every student-athlete in their program.
Right, too many.
Yeah, yeah, there's 500 to 600 student-athletes here at Michigan State.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not realistic. But I enjoy that. I like the level that I'm at. I had some opportunities to potentially go on and coach at the college level, but my family dynamic didn't allow it. By being an athletic director at this level, at the community college level, I still get those same relationships as I would as a coach, knowing the specific student athletes and being involved in their lives that some of the coaches, you know, and the administrators at this level don't get to do. So it's still very much, you know, grassroots, I guess is the best word I could use.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now tuning into Current Sports, we are talking with Lansing Community College Athletic Director Greg Malik. Now, Greg, since you're with us, and you talked about Johnny Football at the beginning of the hour, I kind of want to go off the cuff here for
sure.
A minute because we had a few callers, one in particular yesterday, that kind of brought up whether or not the college athlete should be paid. Now, I want to get your thoughts and opinions on that because you are in a position, you're close to these athletes, you are sitting right there with college athletes. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it all depends on how you define that word paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm probably putting a political answer out there to try and sit in the middle of the fence. But my personal opinion is on some level they need to be compensated. I think that's a better word to use.
Financially,
yes. Now, at the Division I and Division II level of the NCAA, you can cover everything from, you know, books, tuition, fees, room, and board. At the Division I level, at the NJCA level, same thing. Division II level at the NJCA level, you can just cover tuition, books, and fees. You can't cover room and board. And then D3 level at NCAA and NJCAA, there's just no scholarships at all. I think for some of the higher profile student athlete programs like a Michigan State, a Michigan, you know, a Florida, an Alabama, a Texas, whatever, when those student athletes, you know, they sign paperwork every year giving that school, that conference, the NCAA to use their picture, their profile for marketing purposes. And they don't see any of that money that those marketing things are bringing in. I think Jay Billis has been speaking recently on the ESPN and other networks about the Olympic model. You know, being able to go outside of, if it isn't, you know, like now I'm drawing a blank on the swimmer.
Who
won all the gold medals?
Michael Phelps.
Yes, sorry. Thank you.
Phelps.
Michael Phelps. You know, he's allowed because of the Olympic model to go out to Subway and do a commercial for Subway, you know, and make some money doing that.
Right.
I think that model could be something that could be in place.
So like an advertising model.
Yeah, yeah. It could be policed a little better than, you know, the example of the accusations of Mr. Manziel and
right.
taking money to sign, you know, Texas A&M specific sport, you know, memorabilia to make an income.
Right.
So
definitely. Now, you know, it's something that every Wednesday, Greg, on the show, we do a segment called Barbershop Wednesday. We have a segment where we just go at it and debate about a topic because, as you know, you go into a barbershop, guys are always debating about something in a barbershop when it comes to sports.
One of the things about American society, you got to love.
Exactly, right? Got to love the barbershop.
Yep.
I need a haircut right now, to tell you the truth. But all right, Greg, on today's Barbershop Wednesday, we're actually talking about about the college athletes, specifically more so when it comes to Division I athletics, because I don't know if you heard or not, but at the University of Oregon, they have a new football athletic facility that rivals anything I've ever seen in my life.
With a barbershop.
With a barbershop, exactly. With a barbershop. They have everything in there from newly furnished locker rooms, luxurious seating, lounge areas. I mean, it's unbelievable. Same thing in Oklahoma State. I mean, they have a new football facility there that is just, it blows your mind. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's too much for a college athlete? I mean, you got all this lavish stuff. You got a spa, you have a barbershop, you got a hypotherapy type, I don't know what the thing is called, a jacuzzi in there. Do you think that's too much for a college athlete?
Yes, I do. You know, and maybe it's because I wasn't furnished with all those lavish things when I played college athletics at the D2 level. But I think what you need to take a look at as a booster, as a university, and I'm taking a little bit from the D3 philosophy and model of that student athlete experience. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to make sure they have a great experience, but you got to make sure it focuses on a few things. Obviously, athletically, you know, if they're a high profile athlete and you know they have a good chance of playing professionally, they're going to get those things anyway. If they play at the professional level. If you have boosters and you have the budget to give, furnish them with those things, that's okay, but you need to focus on what example are we setting with this, with these student athletes? How can we use some of these things to maybe push a little more focus on the student and student athlete? You know, I'll talk to some kids and to some parents at times about that term student athlete. The word student's there first for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes when you overindulge with some of these things, we lose focus on why they're there. And so I think, yeah, you can go overboard. I think it was 3 years ago. And I'm sorry, I can't think of where I saw the information online, but you look at, I think Ohio State and Texas were the first two institutions where their athletic budgets alone were over $100 million.
My goodness.
And now I think you got Michigan, Florida's in there, Alabama's in there, LSU's in there to where, really?
Yeah.
$100 million? Really?
That's a lot of
yeah,
money.
Yeah,
right?
And it is. You know, you want to take a step back and you almost want to say, good for them, have fun, roll with it. But are we really setting these kids up to be successful, you know, in the real world, you know, holistically, socially, has a lot to play with that when we're doing these types of things.
Greg, I 120% agree with you. And like I said, ladies and gentlemen, that will be our Barbershop Wednesday topic later on at the bottom of the hour, 517-355-9527, if you got any thoughts on that. Now, you talk about these D1 schools who have all this money. I mean, Lance Community College, of course, doesn't have a budget like that or anything close to it. Now, for you, Greg, let's just talk about this aspect to it. Is it discouraging at all to, you know, with you being a D2, D3 type of school, is it discouraging at all when you see all of the coverage and all of the money that a D1 school is getting and you guys don't?
I think I stated to you before, human nature, yeah. You know, I want to see my kids in the newspaper. I want to see my kids on TV. You know, we put competitive programs out there. We have in our conference what you call the All Sports Award, which is you take the whatever sports out of our 9 sports, 7 of them are recognized by the conference, which means you have enough schools that offer them to offer a conference championship.
And for those who don't know, just to cut you off, what is the what 9 sports are those?
We have volleyball, men's and women's cross country, men's and women's basketball, men's and women's track. And men's baseball and softball. Mm-hmm. And the track are the two that aren't acknowledged by the conference. But anyways, mm-hmm. you take your average finish in the conference, and I don't know how they calculate it. I'm not that smart of a guy. but they give an all-sports award. You know, Grand Rapids Community College has won it the past 2 years. You know, when I had my staff meeting after our AD's meetings in early June, you know, we talked about that. You know, we want to be there. You know, if we can finish in the top 2 or 3 in every sport and win a couple, you know, district and regional championships, we can win it. I look back through the history of Lansing Community College Athletics, and we dominated that award in the late 80s and up through the mid-90s. Mm. Last time we won it was 05 and then in 06 back-to-back. But getting back to your point, if we start doing those things, in some of the things we talked about earlier, the media will come. You know, I think I stated to you earlier, me going out to the media and saying, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that, that's just not logical. It's not realistic. I think what we're going to be able to do is get our kids out into the public eye anyway, off the athletic playing field through some community service initiatives, coming on this radio show every day, you know, things along that nature.
Every day. He's on the show every day, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I think that'll start bringing the media in, and then I think that'll start piquing their interest to want to come in and say, you know what, these kids are doing good things. You know, they are out in the community service doing a Habitat for Humanity project. You know, the dorky athletic director is doing the Muscular Dystrophy Association stuff. You know, they are going to reach out to the community twice a year as a conference and do some things. You know, they are going to work with the Greater Lansing Sports Authority, you know, on some projects to get some things going on at our level, maybe combined with some larger schools or even with some high schools to have some cross, you know, basketball events, things along that nature. And then the media will come. They'll see the good that we're doing, you know, and then just human nature will roll from there.
If you build it, they will come.
Exactly. Exactly. Great term.
There you go. That should be the motto, right?
Yep.
All right. Now, Greg, when you took over the program at LCC last year, what are some things that you saw were not functioning the way that you wanted them to function, that you wanted to change once you got the job?
Well, I think it's nothing was going bad. Mm-hmm. Scott Latham, the former AD, had some great things going. But everybody likes to make it their own. You know, everything that you run, you're in charge of or whatever, or you're involved with, you kind of want to put your own little stamp on it. Might be a little selfish by saying that. But I've always looked at, you know, what can we do to give our student athletes a holistic experience?
Right.
You know, I don't want them to just, you know, talk about when they went to Lansing Community College. You know, I played softball, I played volleyball, and I got an associate's degree. Or I went there for 2 years, played and competed, went to a four-year school. I want them to be able to talk about, you know, what they did in the community, going back to the last little, you know, topic we talked about.
Right.
I want them to be able to talk about, you know, when we had the, you know, Greater Lansing Sports Authority come in and we did a combined basketball event where on a Friday we had two of our games, you know, us against Mott and Owens Community College against Grand Rapids. And then we had later that night, either in our gym or the Breslin Center or whatever facility, high school facility we can use, where we had, you know, East Lansing versus Waverly, you know, and we had, you know, Everett playing Grand Ledge, something like that,
yeah.
You know, to where we can get not only just the LCC environment, but the whole community environment involved in some things, and grow from there. I want them to be able to talk about those things. You know, I want them to be able to talk about, you know, okay, because we did so well, we qualified for the national tournament in softball, and we went down to Alabama, those things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. What I want to bring. I also want to bring, obviously, we want to get, you know, graduation rates as high as we possibly can. The academic component is huge. You know, we do get some kids for a reason, because some of them don't qualify, you know, to go on either with their ACT score or their core GPA to initially compete at the D2, D1 level right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
So our job there then is to make sure we get as many of them as possible, either their 48 transferable hours to a D2. If they come in as a non-qualifier for D1, we get them that associate's degree and they can move on. Because we're going to have some student athletes, and we have some right now, I think, that can go on to four-year schools and compete.
So something I see you really echoing, Greg, is that emphasis on the academic part of
Correct.
A student athlete.
Correct.
Which is so important.
It is. It is. You know, I had a meeting earlier today with a parent, and I think the meeting went well. You know, about a student athlete who had been having a little bit of struggles, and I'm not going to get into who it was. But I think we're going to put some things in place to make sure, you know, we learn from a situation that happened with a student athlete and we can move forward making sure the situation doesn't happen again. And I think it's going to be good for everybody in that aspect. I think the student athlete's going to learn something from it. As an athletic department, we're going to learn something from it to help, you know, make things better.
Gotcha. Greg, before I let you go, I want to talk really quickly, really briefly about recruiting when
mm-hmm.
it comes to, because I'm sure a lot of people out there who don't really know about the recruiting process for a D2 or D3 school. Do you guys get a lot of local kids from Lansing since you are in Lansing Community College?
We do. I've been at institutions that basically mandate that you do, and I've been at institutions that give you free rein as far as recruiting. We have no official mandate on having to recruit local kids at LCC.
So sometimes there is a mandate, whatever area
you're
in.
Oh, there are some.
To...
There okay. are some. Well, and it goes back to the community college philosophy. Okay, Lansing Community College, one of the three ways they're funded is tax dollars from the local community.
Oh, well, that makes
you know,
sense then.
Yeah, and we want those tax dollars to support kids in this community through athletics. And I don't have to say this to my coaches. They just automatically do it. I would probably say, and I haven't looked at the numbers yet because I don't have all of the rosters in place, but usually anywhere from 75 to 80% of our rosters are probably local kids.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, Mike Ingram, our men's basketball coach, he's been around, I think he's starting his 24th season as mm-hmm. our coach, 26 years at LCC. He has a great relationship with all the local high schools. So, and the local high schools of men's basketball are talented. You know,
yes, they are.
Women's basketball, Irv Brunson's been around for 22, 23 years. He has those connections. Our softball coach, Mark Kibbe, coached locally in high school for almost 20 years. Our volleyball coach is an LCC grad. She's an Everett grad, Emily Quintero, so she's going to recruit local. So it's just natural to them to recruit local, and I love it. There's no better way to showcase your athletic programs than with local talent.
Talking about those teams, when it comes to the upcoming season, how are your teams looking? What are some of the marquee teams, and what should we be looking for this upcoming season from Lansing Community College athletics?
You know, it's not a traditional sport, but our cross-country programs are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Coach Block, last year we finished the regular season before regionals and nationals. Women were ranked third in the country. Men were ranked, I think, high as fifth or sixth.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and he's excited about both again. We have some kids on the men's and women's side, which we're in our top seven. You take your top seven times, that's how you calculate your team score.
Right.
Some of those kids aren't even going to be in our top seven this year. And it's local talent that he's bringing in. So they're going to be very, very exciting to watch. We always host the regional tournament. They'll probably both qualify for nationals out in Iowa, which will be great. I'm excited for volleyball with the new coaching staff in place. She's really dug into some local talent. We finished 11th in the conference. We finished 8th in the conference last year. Mm-hmm. And we want to improve from there. And she's getting it done. She's getting it done recruiting-wise. She's getting it done administrative-wise. We just have to see how they come out on the playing field. Men's and women's basketball. Coach Brunson, our women's basketball coach, is the most mild-mannered coach you ever met. Heart of gold. Mm. He doesn't call me every day. He just gets it done.
He's a doer.
He is, and the girls love playing for him. You know, he's the type of person where if he never won another basketball game as the LCC coach again, he could still coach as long as he wanted to. Because he brings in kids that love him. He makes sure they go to class, they get their degree. He wants them to learn how life is realistic, and he moves them on, and they're successful. I mean, he just does it for the right reason. Softball, I'm excited about softball with what we got coming in for a recruiting class. I've never seen a coach transition from high school to a college coaching level and just fall in love with recruiting as much as Coach Kibbe has. So we're excited about that. And actually, we're looking for a baseball staff. Our former coach, Ed Powers, resigned a week ago Monday.
Oh, did he?
Yep, so hopefully we're going to get that position posted and filled within the next couple days. If I can real quick, we're scheduled to have baseball tryouts on the 26th and 27th of August. We've moved those back to the 9th and 10th of September, Westside Park, 3 p.m.
There you go. One more time for people.
Westside Park, 3 p.m., September 9th and 10th, baseball.
We will put that on our Facebook page as well, ladies and gents. And, Ed, how long was Ed the coach there?
4 years.
4 years.
Yep.
And he's moved on.
Yep.
Well, anything else? How can people get in touch with you?
They can on our website, lcc.edu/athletics. Has my contact information, any of our coaches' contact information, all of our schedules and results, our rosters as well. You know, take a look at the rosters. Look at the local kids that we have on there. I think everybody will be excited about that.
There you have it. Lansing Community College Athletic Director Greg Malik. Greg, thanks so much for being a part of Current Sports.
See you tomorrow.
All right. See you tomorrow. Greg will be on tomorrow. All right. We'll return to Current Sports. We'll dive into our Current Sports section of the show. I want to remind you all, we'll be taking your calls right after the break. Don't hesitate. Pick up that phone, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Let us hear your thoughts on anything. We want to hear what's on your mind. Stay tuned. More Current Sports is coming right at you.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, how did a rumor about the Boston Marathon bombing suspect ricochet around the internet and devastate one family? That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now coming up at 2 p.m.
Seven days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Hey, Hey, good people, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, as always, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports, giving you all the latest sporting news concerning you. That's right, the good people of Mid-Michigan. We just finished talking with Lansing Community College Athletic Director Greg Malik. He is such a great guy. He just got hired last year. A lot of great things happening in the world of Lansing Community College Athletics. And we will post information on our Facebook page of how you can get involved. They actually have baseball tryouts coming up, revamping that entire baseball team as their coach have just left the team a week ago, to be specific. And, yeah, you can get involved. Tryouts are coming soon. Again, you can get that information on our website or on our Facebook page, excuse me, later on. We will post that. All right, well, let's dive into our current sports topics. All right, Justin Verlander, JV, he looked to be back at least for last night. I'll tell you that. Verlander, he toyed with Cleveland's lineup for 8 innings. And Don Kelly hit a 3-run homer off Justin Masterson, leading the Tigers to their 10th straight win. When are they going to lose? I have no idea. They are certainly rolling right now. They had a 5-1 win over the Cleveland Indians yesterday. And Don Kelly, he really owns Masterson. He is now 11 of 24. That's 458. It's just redonkulous. With 2 homers and 8 RBIs. On June 9th, he actually hit a homer off of Masterson in Detroit's 4-1 win. And Masterson had a quote today. It was pretty funny. It said, quote, "If I was Superman, he'd beat my kryptonite," end quote. So, and he definitely has been. Don Kelly is just something. He loves going against Masterson. Fun stuff there. But like his teammates, Masterson, he struggles with the Tigers. He dropped 0 for 3 with a 7.23 ERA against Detroit this season. Verlander, who's now 12-8, he allowed 1 run and 4 hits as the Tigers won their second straight in this 4-game series and beat the Indians for the 10th time in 11 games to open up a 5-game lead over Cleveland in the AL Central. Cleveland, of course, really trying to catch up with Detroit, and they're not. Anytime they play Detroit, it's always a bad outing, I tell you. Miguel Cabrera, he picked up his 100th RBI as the Tigers improved to 11-3 against their nearest division rival. Also want to note the Tigers' second baseman, Omar Infante, with that sprained left ankle, he began a minor league rehab assignment for the Triple-A Toledo team on Tuesday. Now, Tigers right-handed pitcher Octavio Dotel, he has a sore elbow. He will begin rehab assignment with a Class A Lakeland team in Florida on Wednesday, today. Now, he's been out since April 20th. So, and I also want to note that Leland has been named the best manager in the American League. Yes, Baseball America released its list of best as chosen by Major League managers, and Detroit's Jim Leland was named the American League's top manager. Leland, a 2-time National League Manager of the Year and winner of the American League Manager of the Year Award in 2006, he topped Bob Melvin of the Oakland A's and Buck Showalter of the Baltimore Orioles, who both tied for second place. Now, Leland is in his 8th season as manager of the Tigers and has compiled a record of 272 and 573 record. He has 1,742 career wins during his major league managerial career, tops among all active major league managers, and ranks 15th on the all-time manager win list. So the publication asked major league managers to break down the best major leaguers in a variety of categories. And Miguel Cabrera, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, and Austin Jackson were the other Tigers recognized on that list. Cabrera was voted on the league's best hitter and ranked first in terms of strike zone judgment. He plays second behind Baltimore's Chris Davis for best power and second behind Los Angeles Mike Trout, excuse me, for most exciting player. It's always exciting to see Miggy play, I tell you that. And Max Scherzer, he was named the AL's best overall pitcher and was voted as having the best fastball, with Verlander's fastball ranked second. Scherzer was also recognized as having the second best slider in the AL. Best curveball went to Verlander, second behind he was second behind Boston's Clay Buchholz. And best defensive outfielder was Jackson. He placed third behind Trout and Baltimore's Adam Jones. So, and Maglio Ordonez, he announced earlier this week that he will be running for mayor of Puerto La Cruz. That's an oil town in Venezuela. That was according to a report yesterday from Bloomberg Business Week. Congrats to Maglio. That should be interesting. He will reportedly run in the Socialist Party of the late Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. A six-time All-Star, Ordonez moved to Puerto La Cruz in his native Venezuela after announcing his retirement in 2012. Now, the town is situated about 186 miles east of Caracas, his birthplace, and the population is about 500,000. Man, so we'll see if Maglio can put it off and you know, win mayor. That should be very interesting. Amy Neff, a four-time All-Big Ten performer during her MSU playing career, has been named as the new assistant coach for the MSU women's golf team. Neff replaces Lauren Dine, who was appointed head coach at Tulane in July. Neff, who has played professionally for 3 years, is fifth all-time in Spartan history with scoring average of 76.10. She helped lead MSU to a Big Ten title as a senior in 2011 when she was awarded the Big Ten Medal of Honor. She graduated in 2011 with a 3.6 GPA in communications, and they are really thrilled to have Amy Neff now on that staff. Congrats to Amy. Red Wings. The Red Wings have re-signed center Joakim Andersen to a two-year contract worth $1.465 million. The 24-year-old restricted free agent impressed in 38 games for the Red Wings in the 2012-2013, scoring 3 goals with 5 assists. He is a native of Sweden, also appeared in 14 postseason games, and was extremely effective in the face-off circle. Only Pavel Datsyuk took more face-offs during the Wings' playoff run, while Andersen won over 55% of his draws. He was a third-round pick in 2007. All right, Johnny Football. Yes, he stays in the news more so recently with this whole autograph fiasco that he is currently involved in. Now, an East Coast autograph broker is now alleging that he paid Texas A&M QB Johnny Manziel $7,500 for an autograph session in January during the Walter Camp Football Foundation event. Now, the broker showed video evidence to ESPN of Manziel signing helmets and footballs in a hotel room. There is no video of the Heisman winner accepting cash. The broker claimed the videos were initially shot only to be used as proof with authenticating company PSA DNA. Now, there are also claims that the videos show Manziel saying to the broker, quote, "never worked with him," end quote. And if he told anyone, Manziel will refuse to work with him in the future. The broker says he does not intend to cooperate with the NCAA investigation into Manziel. And if the investigation finds that Manziel has violated NCAA bylaw, which is accepting money for promoting or advertising the commercial sale of a product or service, he could be ruled ineligible for this upcoming football season. So, really sticky situation. It kind of goes into that conversation that we just had with Greg Malik about whether or not athletes, college athletes, I should say, should be paid. Very sticky situation right here. So, I'll keep you updated as the days go on with this story. And also want to note that NCAA apparel jerseys. Now, one of the defendants in a pair of lawsuits concerning the use of college athletes' name and likeness said in a court filing Monday that products bearing college athletes' jerseys numbers do not represent actual college athletes. But earlier yesterday, if you wanted to buy one of the many Texas A&M number 2 or South Carolina number 7 jerseys for sale on the NCAA e-commerce website on shopncaasports.com, the best way to find them, get this, was to type in the words Johnny Manziel or Jadeveon Clowney in the search box, which kind of goes against what the NCAA is all about. You cannot profit off of a football player's last name, and that's basically what this is saying. Now, USA Today reports that they found the same thing could be done when Alabama quarterback A.J. McCarron Ohio State quarterback Braxton Miller, and Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray's names were typed into the search box as well. You can even plug in former Buckeyes quarterback Terrell Pryor, who was suspended in 2011 after selling his own memorabilia. And you can find his old OSU jersey. His old OSU jersey would appear if you typed in his name. The search function quickly became a hot topic on Twitter as ESPN analyst Jay Billis posted a stream of screen grabs from the site showing replica jerseys of athletes such as Clemson's Taj Boyd, Louisville's Teddy Bridgewater, and others. He says, quote, "They're selling their jerseys pretending that it's some sort of coincidence that all of the value is in the school's name and there's no value in the player, when just coincidentally, every time you see a jersey, it's of the team's best player," end quote. Totally agree with you. So that's definitely an NCAA violation, if you ask me. If you just go on the website, you type in something like Johnny Manziel, you can clearly see the jersey pop-up of Johnny Manziel. And, of course, it's supposed to be, when you go on the website, it's supposed to be a random number. But it's the number of the player's most notable, of the team's most notable player. So interesting stuff right there. I'm sure, more of this will pan out in the upcoming days. And Michael Beasley. Oh, boy, Michael Beasley. In the least surprising story ever, Suns for Michael Beasley. He was arrested Tuesday in Scottsdale, Arizona. I can pretty much take a guess what he was arrested for. A police officer found 3 cigarettes suspected to contain marijuana in Beasley's car after smelling it during a traffic stop. Now, he was released after being cited for investigation of 1 felony count, each of marijuana possession and possession of drug paraphernalia. Beasley, who is no stranger to drug-related controversy, he vowed that his marijuana problems were in the past. "It's in the past. I've done it before. I'm done with it. I don't do that type of thing anymore." And wrong. Michael Beasley in the news again for that. I tell you, drug problems, marijuana problems were huge for him last season. He was ticketed with possession and speeding in Minneapolis suburb in 2011 as a member of the Timberwolves and admitted that he twice violated the league's drug policy as a member of the Miami Heat in 2009 for marijuana. Yes, the number 2 pick of the 2008 NBA draft, Beasley signed a 3-year contract worth $18 million with the Suns last season, but maybe playing his way out of the league because he cannot shake this whole marijuana addiction that he has. Now, his first year as a Sun saw him averaging career lows in points, rebounds, and field goal percentage, while his team recorded the second worst record in franchise history. Michael Beasley is becoming the Ricky Williams of the NBA, I tell you. Again, give us a call, 517-355-9527. Give us your thoughts on any of the topics we just ran down. Barbershop Wednesday is right around the corner. Again, facebook.com/currentsports. Even tweet me a question at Al Martin, WKAR. Want to hear what's on your mind. More Current Sports is coming right at you.
On the next Fresh Air, why does it cost more in America to give birth, have a colonoscopy, or have a joint replaced than it does in most developed countries? We talk with New York Times correspondent Elizabeth Rosenthal, who's spending a year investigating the high costs of healthcare in the U.S. The third part of her series was published this week. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock. All right, ladies and gents, well, we have approached our last segment of Current Sports. Right now, I am joined by my production assistant, Matt Lutke, as we kick off our Barbershop Wednesday segment. We have a pretty interesting one from you all. Again, we are also still taking your calls, 517-355-9527. Get your thoughts on anything you want to talk about. But today's Barbershop Wednesday, we're also going to get Aaron involved on this one too, because he had some comments too on this this subject. I think everyone does, to be honest with you. And you know, Greg Malik, Lansing Community College athletic director, he had some comments on it as well. I mean, how can you not? On this Barbershop Wednesday, we are talking about whether or not college athletes are too spoiled. And the reason why I bring up this conversation is for those of you who don't know, have you seen or Googled the new athletic football facilities of the University of Oregon and Oklahoma State University? If you haven't, they are redonkulous. Redonkulous. I mean, it's unbelievable. Oklahoma State actually had a $19 million project in effect that if you look at the pictures of it, it blows your mind. But it's nothing compared to Oregon's. Oregon's rivals really any NFL team's athletic facility, if you ask me. With Oregon, they have a building that contains 145,000 square feet of meeting space, instructional rooms, fitness centers, locker rooms, offices, dining facilities, lounges, auditoriums, and tons of other offices and spaces unlike, just hasn't been seen before, fathomed before in the world of sports. I mean, now, they also have a 25,000 square foot weight room that is forfeited with Brazilian Ipe wood floors, which have a reputation for being dense enough to bend a nail, above a free weight and polymetric area that is one of the world's only 40-yard electric tracks. Electronic tracks. What the heck? And then I could go on and on. The players' locker room on the same level, the third floor coaches features individually ventilated locker rooms to eliminate odors, infection-free Corian surfaces. What is Corian surface? I don't even know what a Corian. What is Corian? Please Google that for me. I don't know what that means. A secure keypad-powered locker opening and closing, and a, quote, magic shelf, end quote, to recharge portable electronics without even plugging them in. I mean, that's unbelievable. I need that in my house. I need that right now, actually. My phone's about to die. Unlike the players, it has a feel and look described as more stately. That's the used they word. That's the word they used. Stately and, quote, country club-like, end quote, and a four-foot-deep hydrotherapy pool to ease aches and pains. Oregon's coaching staff of former football players has more than 300 years combined experience, and the program has done relatively well over the years. And get this, they also, it kind of plays into our segment in Barbershop Wednesday, they have a barbershop, ladies and gentlemen. They have their own barbershop right next to the locker room.
It's crazy.
Matt, what do you think about
it? Like, you basically just described like a wealthy city.
Yeah, basically.
Like a very affluent city. It has everything you could ever need, every amenity imaginable, even the ones you didn't think you needed and you don't need, they have. It's an arms race. Alabama, they recently putting in a waterfall thing for their hot and cold tubs.
Wow.
And an Oregon player tweeted that they're 6 years behind the curve because they've had it for half a decade. So it's like,
are you serious? They've had it for half a decade?
Apparently. It's insane. And Oregon and Oklahoma State, I mean, at least they have billionaires in their backyard who love the schools, and you can kind of understand how, you know, T. Boone Pickens donates like $50 million to Oklahoma State, like, you know, once every month or something. It's crazy. But, you know, they have these resources, and they're just, they're burning through them with all this stuff that they don't need. It's extravagant. It's over the top. And honestly, it seems like it's bad for the athletes.
It is. And, you know, I want to piggyback off something that Greg Malik said at the beginning, at the top of the hour when we talked to him about this. And, you know, when I look at this, no one on this earth needs all of that. No one. And I mean, I feel like I just described Jay-Z's house or something like that. I mean,
it is. It's like MTV Cribs.
Right. MTV Cribs at college. You know what I mean? And it's ridiculous. No kid needs all of that. And I really think it sends a bad message. It sends a bad message to the athletes who are playing for those programs. And living this lavish lifestyle, they kind of forget that okay, you're there to play football. Don't get me wrong. You're there. That's why they recruited you. At the same time, college, there's an academic portion of college as well. And it kind of sends a bad message to them academically. I mean, they're getting spoiled with all of this stuff, and everything else is taking a back seat. I mean, it blows up their heads to a point where it's uncontrollable. You know,
absolutely.
You can't tell me that a facility like this doesn't make a player or doesn't shift a player's attitude and mindset into, hey, I deserve this for the rest of my life, you know?
Right, and that's the biggest problem because, you know, some of these guys are going to go to the NFL, but a majority of them are not, and they're going to have to, you know, enter into society, live a normal life, free of all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're used to, you know, being catered to on a level that is, you know, startling and kind of worrisome, and then you go into just a normal life where, yeah, you can't live like that. You have to go buy groceries, and you know, you're doing things that normal people do.
Right.
It just seems like that is a bad transition for 23-year-olds to have to make after 4 years of just living large in a palace, basically.
Right. Exactly. It's really ridiculous. And Aaron, I didn't see the pictures until after one show. Aaron had it on his laptop, and it completely blew my mind. Aaron, when you saw it, what went through your head, man?
I don't even know where to begin. I mean, do you start with the NCAA? Do you start with what you guys just said about how, you know, after college, I mean, it's sort of you spoil them now, and frankly, who wants to go, you know, lesser than what they already have?
Right.
You know, so we do have a call coming in, so I'm going to get that right now.
Thank you, Aaron. He's always busy at work. We got to let Aaron chime in sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, though, and I think it sends a bad message in. But, you know, you can also play devil's advocate with this, though, and look on the other side of it. I mean, like you said, if you're getting all this money and you have the money to do it.
Right.
It's like, why not, you know? I don't know.
It's troubling.
I'm sure Alex, if he was here, he would argue.
Oh, yeah, he would be, you know, all for it. But, I mean, the Oregon facility, like, the walls are, like, more than half just televisions. Like,
right.
it's 60% TVs on the walls. But, you know, in general, you know, even bigger than just the facilities themselves, they're doing it to woo 17-year-olds. You know, it's all geared toward getting better recruits, attracting better talent to your school. And it just seems like these schools are just bending over backwards for the whims of teenagers, just trying to have the flashiest, most, you know, incredible thing that they've ever seen, just trying to catch their eye.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they should be maybe focusing those resources on other things like athletic, you know, just training and, you know, academic studies and just preparing them for life instead of just saying, hey, look what we have. Look at all the cool iPad stuff you're going to be able to play with when you come here.
Right, and when it comes down to it, you know, it comes down to recruiting. This is what this is why they spend all of this money, and it's just to woo recruits, like you said. I mean, it's like if you ever seen He Got Game, you know, when Ray Allen, Jesus Shuttlesworth is going to these different colleges. They're doing things to try to impress these 17-year-olds, and you never know what a 17-year-old does. I mean, they're so young, you know. They may commit to this school verbally, and then the next month they're thinking about something else, you know. But that's what it comes down to when you talk about, you know, this amount of money and what they've done to these facilities, which is it's really mind-boggling, you know. And, again, if you got a comment on this, give us a call here at the station, 517-355-9527. It's really disturbing, though, because you know, to look at all of this stuff, and you look at other parts. I'm bringing, you know, I'm going beyond X's and O's here and talking about just human nature.
Right.
You know, there are many people out here just struggling. You know, Detroit just filed for bankruptcy. You know, other countries in Africa, you know, I mean, there are people starving left and right. And you look at colleges like this and kids who are coming just to play football, and it makes me really look at society and say, okay, we got a problem.
Yeah.
We definitely have a problem.
And it's getting worse.
And it's getting worse. It definitely is. And you said at Tennessee.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
Yeah.
7,000 square foot locker room. HD TVs in every row of lockers. They have a 3,600 square foot hydrotherapy room.
Wow.
They have an MMA cage.
An MMA cage.
Why would you need that? So that your players have another avenue to get injured? That seems like counterproductive to, you know, keeping athletes healthy and on the field.
Let's have them
go, you know, just beat the crap out of each other in an MMA cage. I have no idea. It looks cool, I'm guessing, and people will be like, wow. Tennessee is pretty awesome.
They're pretty cool. They have an MMA cage. I'm coming here. That's ridiculous.
But it's just like, you know, your neighbors get a pool, so you have to get a bigger pool, and that's what it's coming to. You know, Alabama gets a waterfall, so Tennessee has an MMA cage. I'm sure next year Oregon's going to come out with like a hovercraft to shuttle players around. It'll never stop.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, and you talk about kids. You know, these are kids getting this stuff. And, you know, like you said, when the kids who are playing football or any sport and enjoying these facilities, I mean, they're being spoiled so much that, you know, like you said, most of them aren't going to play in the NFL and going to play professionally in these sports. And they go into regular society and have to be a regular human being. That, like you said, it sets them up for failure. I mean,
that's a tough adjustment for anybody.
It's a huge adjustment.
You know, going into real life, let alone going from a life of, like, almost privilege and, you know, this excess to, you know, you're making minimum wage, working paycheck to paycheck. Like, that's a pretty big...
Huge.
Big gap.
But I don't see it changing, though.
No.
And
I think it's going to get worse.
I think it will get worse.
I got two words.
Okay.
One of which, Al, you already mentioned. Where does the education – I mean, education, where does that – I mean, I don't even think
they
that –
They have iPads in their lockers,
right,
Aaron. They're studying in their locker rooms.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, let's not even begin to think about you know, some of these players probably weren't even eligible to make the school normally.
Right.
But they got in on athletic – a scholarship, so
yeah,
they were able to get in.
Right.
So, you know, education, you know, how much money was spent on this facility? Why not, you know, spend more money? You know, I know if you ask the people that do all this, they're going to say, oh, well, this is a separate budget.
Right.
Are you? No. It's, come on. It's still the university. You can
the university.
You can still, hey, we got $8 bajillion here. We're going to give a little bit so, you know, we can update our library or something like that.
Right.
The other part is society, you know, maybe completely from a different angle. Are we to blame a little bit because as fans, you know, they continue to increase prices. You know, I'm not saying Michigan State is or Oregon did. I guess we'd have to check the numbers on that. You know, as fans, we're always going to be there. We're always going to show up.
Exactly.
You know, Tigers games, you know, prices of items.
Ridiculous.
You know,
right.
you want a beer? Pay up, buddy.
Right.
you want to dehydrate at the game? Well, that's too bad. You're going to have to pay up. So, you know, that's another angle to look at it is, you know, as society, is it kind of our fault? Because no matter what they do, you know, they have us by, you know, a rope. I mean, no matter what they do, we're still going to show up and attend these games, and they're going to continue to get our money, and they're going to continue to upgrade their facilities.
That's he brings a very good point. And it's supply and demand. You know, sports kind of, you know, and the market of sports is so huge now, and the supply and demand of fans going out to games and wanting to see the games and paying outrageous prices at Tigers games or whatever game you go to.
Right.
It's through the roof, and we're paying for it, you know what I mean? You know, and I think this is kind of a realm that's really unique, though, when you talk about this, because, I mean, this is college. This is college kids.
Right, and it starts even before that. You know, high school recruiting is a billion-dollar industry now.
Crazy.
We're, you know, making celebrities out of these kids who haven't gone to college yet, are still, you know, about to be a high school senior, but he's the number one prospect, so everybody loves him. Everybody wants him. He gets pretty much anything he wants. Like, look at Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
He's 3 weeks away from dating Amanda Bynes and right, becoming, you know, even bigger of a tabloid sensation. We just create monsters out of these kids.
Right.
Because we hand them everything.
We hand them everything, man.
And
they're
then,
spoiled.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not used to having to work for things and having to earn what they're given. And it's just, I know they earn it on the football field, but there's a limit there. And
yeah,
I think, you know, 7,000 square feet of locker room maybe is a little bit excessive.
It's very excessive. I don't see it stopping. It's a constant circle. Sad, but that's the world we live in. All right, well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Sharg and Matt Lutke, production assistants, intern Mike Corey, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Lansing Community College Athletic Director Greg Malik for joining us. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3's Lansing. Hey, take care and be easy, people.